Nick. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Cool.
What happened to the music? There's some good music playing.
I think it's like pre, maybe, like lobby type thing.
All right. Let me send an invite to speak. Nick, you should have gotten an invite.
Should we post this on LinkedIn?
We did.
No, like the actual link to the...
Yeah, you can post like starting now.
Testing.
Hear you loud and clear.
Amazing. What's up, guys? It's going to be a good one today. Very happy to be here.
Yes. Really happy to have you. Chris, your invite's on the way.
All right. Got it.
Hey, Chris. Welcome back. How was your travels? You've been busy.
Yeah, it's been good. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes. All right. Perfect. Great.
Thank you.
Who was that? That was you, David?
Yeah, there's a soundboard.
Oh, that's fun.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
And David, congratulations on the wedding. I saw the photos.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, just by chance, tomorrow is my engagement party. So I was out in Austin for a few days, back in town in Los Angeles, Orange County tomorrow for the engagement, and then flying out to Mainnet next week. So it's just
September. Wow. So you're in months. And out, huh? You're lucky.
How are you guys all getting hitched in this bear market?
We work well under pressure.
Yes, we definitely do.
Well, at least you know, she's not after you for your money because it's a bear market.
Right. You give a little, make a little.
Waiting for Lenny to join. Oh, here he is.
But yeah, David, big congrats as well. I think I saw a video of you and Aria going nuts on the dance floor. So that was pretty encouraging. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, honestly, I didn't know Aria was gonna, you know, let loose so much. He was soaking it all in.
It was a great time.
More than me.
Good time.
You talking about Arthur Hayes party?
Say again?
No.
I said, are you talking about Arthur Hayes' party?
No, at the wedding, he was going off.
Oh. David just got married this past Sunday.
Oh, nice. Congratulations. Awesome.
Lenny, how you doing? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. What's up, Aria, Dave, Chris, Nick? You got some nice guys up here.
Yeah, we have a good time.
Always a pleasure to reconnect.
Okay, let's just give it a minute or two.
It's a pleasure to see Jenny listening in. She's one of our in-house CPAs solution team members over at Bitwave.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jenny. Yeah, Jenny's super helpful. We've been talking on and off with our latest client on board at Bitwave. Super helpful.
Yeah, the whole team over here is thrilled and thankful that, you know, you're putting on these X spaces. You know, a great way to kind of debrief and share some insights. So brought some notes to the table from Permissionless.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear. All right, let's begin. I think let's just start with a brief introduction from everyone on the panel. We'll start with you, David.
Hey, guys. I mean, most of you guys know me. I'm the co-founder of OnChain Accounting. We service Web3 crypto and blockchain businesses, creating and maintaining their entire back office operations for crypto accounting. And yeah, that's super short, super sweet, you know, because most of you guys know me. I'm going to leave it at that.
Lenny, why don't you indulge us?
Of course. Thank you for having me. Lenny, co-founder and CEO of Blank Page Studios. We're a Web3 studio building products, specifically primarily on Solana, with a goal of entertaining what a single profile will look like. For managing on-chain and off-chain data.
That's awesome. And I'm sure we're going to dig into the Solana ecosystem. A lot of news came out this past month or so. Chris, how's it going on your corner?
Yeah, things are going very well. Things have been busy. We've been making a lot of exciting announcements here over at Bitwave. But as a brief introduction, my name is Chris, partnership manager for Bitwave. We are a enterprise level digital asset accounting software solution. So we work with a lot of Web3 companies and accounting partners such as OnChain Accounting. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Nick.
Hello, hello everyone. David, Aria, thank you guys for putting on an amazing show here. I'm very much looking forward to it. Thank you for having me, and delighted to be up here with an esteemed, incredible panel. My name is Nick Calabro. I am, how do I put this? I guess I'll start with Bitcoiner. That's probably the most prominently. I helped co-found Deep Lake Finance. We're a DLC API. We went through Bitcoin Frontier Fund, so that was pretty exciting. And lately I'm working on the growth side of other kind of Bitcoin native, colloquially they're saying kind of Bitcoin only startups, which I'm still trying to figure out what the heck that even actually means, Bitcoin only. It's kind of like the rabbit hole that I'm digging myself into these days. But yeah, all, you know, Bitcoin primitive DeFi is exactly what I'm thinking about most these days. Very, very excited for it. And yeah, pumped for this conversation today, bringing in some really cool people. So thank you guys for having me. Excited for this.
Awesome. We're happy to have you. Let's kick things off with Chris. Chris, because you've been like super busy. As many of you know, Chris just got back from the Permissionless Conference. I actually had a good friend of mine that was there, and she like recorded a bunch of the discussions. So I got a little sneak peek of what was discussed. But Chris, please enlighten us.
Of course. Well, you know how these conferences are. You know, I'm back-to-back meetings. You're running between the conference expo, back to the hotel for the virtual meetings. And when you have a little bit of free time, it's good to kind of listen into some of the speaking sessions. But like an overall, I think, key takeaway is that there's a lot of infrastructure support that's there, as well as companies involved from a risk management perspective. And it shows just a little bit of maturity when you're walking the floor and there's various insurance brokers and insurance companies there that have booths and they're servicing custodians, exchanges, crypto funds. And we hear from time to time, of course, unfortunately, various hacks that can occur. So it's good to know and bring to the table when you're having discussions with, like, for example, I know that Gate.io, they're in the process of opening up a subsidiary out here in the U.S. So I'm planning on meeting with their controller And they're just in the process of building out their infrastructure too. So it's great to be able to, you know, connect the dots, introduce them to companies such as Arch Insurance. I think that they are a Lloyd's of London cover holder from my understanding. Furthermore, I met with Western Alliance Bank out there. They're actually one of the few banks that's still working with Web3 companies. So I'm sure that, you know, as accounting professionals, you know, from time to time, you know, we're talking to clients that are asking us, hey, do you know of a bank that we can that are still accepting fiat deposits? And they are. It might be a bit more challenging right now due to regulatory uncertainties. They mentioned that they might not even pay interest on fiats, but at least it's a place where you can park your money. They are still providing business loans, a line of credit, and working with more kind of mid-market companies as well. I had the pleasure of meeting with Fireblocks. I think everyone's aware of their business model. If you're not, they do provide like wallet as a service, providing companies the ability to hold custody of their own assets and providing like best practices associated with that necessity. A lot of companies, and this is kind of like a growing trend right now when I'm talking to partners and to clients, associated with payments within Web3. Bitwave, we've been developing our AR and AP capabilities. We partnered with Coinbase as well as with NetSuite. So there's like a triple verification process. You know, for example, if a business has bills that they need to pay, those bills are stored within NetSuite. And then you need funds held probably within Coinbase Institutional. That's actually a location where you can verify wallet addresses. And the worst mistake, one of them you can make, is actually sending payments to the wrong address. So you need processes to verify this type of transaction. So there's a lot of infrastructure support with regards to payments. You know, builders are going to build. This is one area that we've been seeing some companies put some development efforts in. There's a client and future partner of ours, a company called TokenSoft, and they work with foundations prior to their ICO on how to manage token allocation. So I'm starting to understand like the development efforts associated with L1s and L2s. First things first, you have the labs. The labs organization, that entity will build out the infrastructure. And then once they're ready to go live, maybe with an ICO, then they have that foundation, typically work that's offshore. And then you have these companies like TokenSoft, Magna, that's a company they were there, which provide, they're basically kind of like the Carta of Web3, handling vesting schedules, both with the foundations, but also with VCs that might be making that type of capital investment. They're going to be allocated likely maybe some ownership, some equity, but also some tokens from that foundation and part of that investment. So a lot of exciting things happening. Another company that was there, Toku. We've been asked questions. Can you help us track token allocation for payroll? You know, actually having tokens a part of employee compensation. So Toku kind of specializes in that. There's, you know, various rules associated with how you want to manage that type of treasury. So overall, very productive meeting, and it's great to build that, show up and just, you know, meet with current clients and partners and share that type of insight.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Would you say there was like a focus at the conference or like a takeaway that you left from, you know, sitting in maybe some of the speeches or just meeting with those partners that you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that was all that's on everyone's top of mind is with regards to the SEC with FASB guidance. I think we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But, you know, we're still, I think, about 17 months or so until we have a finalized decision. You know, FASB recently had the vote about how you want to mark to market, reflect the fair market value of assets on the balance sheet. So it's great to kind of hear everyone's insights in that regard in terms of how they're understanding and navigating. Still a little bit of uncertainty, but it's good to have some guidance from FASB.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I think, is news that broke that few are talking about because they don't really understand it or appreciate the significance of it. But allowing companies to hold crypto on their balance sheet, publicly traded companies specifically, and be able to adjust it to market, you know, when it goes up, not just when it goes down. Because until now, it's considered as an intangible asset, and therefore it only gets marked down. So it's really challenging to communicate to your investors, like, we have all these losses. But then when the asset goes back up, they don't get to show these gains. And as you mentioned, the news broke. It sounds like it'll only become effective at the end of 2024. But it does seem like that once they vote on it, which is expected to take place towards the end of this year, companies aren't going to be allowed to do it. So it won't be a requirement. I don't know why someone wouldn't want to do it, but it wouldn't be a requirement up until when it becomes effective. But companies will be allowed to do it even earlier than the end of 2024. So I think that's like a tremendous win for the crypto industry. And that might even be why we're also seeing this other news breaking with Deutsche Bank and they just announced a partnership with Taurus Custody to offer crypto to their clients. Because a lot of corporations have been standing on the sidelines because of this unfair accounting treatment, which really makes no sense. So really glad to see that they've... that they're turning a page in regards to that.
Right, exactly. And one question that comes to mind is that, is this applied for all tokens? You know, what about NFTs? And I think wrapped tokens were left off.
Yes.
Of that ruling. And, I was listening to our CEO, Pat White, provide some commentary, and I was surprised to hear that I think about 25 to maybe 50% of our clients have a good portion of their tokens that are wrapped, with regards to ETH staking and, Lido staked ETH. You know, how many companies are involved in that? You know, certainly a lot. So it's like things might get a little bit more complicated, taking a bifurcated approach with having some assets still impaired, and then others with regards to, the fair value accounting. So it's...
kind of sounds like an incentive to unwrap almost, could be on the horizon.
Yeah.
Don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, so I saw that in the article and I was like, okay, these regulators just don't get it. They excluded wrapped tokens, which makes no sense because it's the same asset. It's a one for one. So why would you treat native Bitcoin differently than wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum or some other chain? So they, I think it said the big four accounting firms push back saying you have to include wrapped as well. It just makes no sense. So I suspect they'll come around before the ruling is voted on. But yeah, as it stands, that is correct. It's it excludes wrapped and NFTs and anything not native to the asset. But I just think it's the lack of them understanding of the space, not their true intention or what they think should be. So, Nick, I know you got excited there for a second to think that,
Yeah, it sounds like, all right, so wrap everything. I'm trying to figure out how this would work economically. Wrap everything at the bottom, and then that way you're... Right, there's a way to almost game it so that way you can switch between wrapped and unwrapped to optimize where you think the market's going to go, right? You're not going to get penalized and you want to get the benefit of it moving in certain directions. So just gamify how you're or when you are wrapping and unwrapping. I don't know if that's sound. It feels feels weird. And it does, Ari, I agree with you. It kind of just sounds like whoever made up that rule doesn't get it. But I guess I do kind of get it, right? I don't know, it's the difference between spot and ETF, maybe, right? There is there's technically something mechanically different about the asset, But yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about this all like on the fly here, but it's, I don't know. Interesting.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like you'll have to, like, just for example, like carve out Aave, you know, on various liquidity pool tokens, you know, which certainly has the right to various underlying asset as well. So, you know, there's various outliers that fall outside of the FASB guidance here.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting, the timing, you know, it's kind of like you have these two things playing out simultaneously. You have the spot ETF, you know, with BlackRock with their application. And then you have this FASB rule, and both of these options are a way for corporations to get access to crypto, right? They can either buy the native asset or they can buy the ETF, and it's like they're like competing forces. And you know, hopefully they both get approved sooner than later, so people have many options. But it seems like it's inevitable that it's going to happen quite soon. So that's really exciting to see.
Well, it's like what Larry Fink stated, that Bitcoin is gold.
He did say that.
You know, you know, similar to how like ETFs have really provided investors a way to hedge with having access to, you know, a type of gold investment. You know, you could, you know, apply maybe a similar methodology with a Bitcoin ETF in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect analogy. Yeah. Nick, how's it going over there in the Bitcoin ecosystem? I know you were telling me the other day about sidechains. I think a lot of us are not so familiar with what's going on. There was a lot of back and forth on Twitter. I don't think it's been resolved from the community standpoint.
Oh, you're referring to Paul Stork, BIP 300, 301.
Yeah, exactly. Can you fill us in? What's the latest? And before,
I mean,
maybe before you tell us the latest, just give us a little high level background of what the whole contention is about.
Yeah, yeah. So, yep. Here, I'll. So, I guess there's in a quick overview. I guess there's a so obviously any kind of adjustments to Bitcoin goes through this Bitcoin improvement proposal process. And so there are these two BIPs, 300 and 301, proposed by, I believe it's Paul Stork. I don't think it's Peter Stork. Yeah, Paul Stork. And you'll see him all around Twitter. He's the CEO of Layer 2 Labs. And these BIPs are essentially proposing to kind of add this sidechain feature to Bitcoin. The mechanics of it are like really fascinating. There's like this 3 to 6 month locking period involved in it that are just like all these like weird little nuances that are like all these brand new rules that are, you know, uncommon to just like Bitcoin itself. Ultimately, the vision is that you can create a sidechain similarly as you would have like a sidechain on ETH, right? Like imagine like Polygon to ETH. You can kind of have like Ethereum to Bitcoin, right? And it's this whole other sidechain, its own rules, its own ability to issue tokens. And of course, since it's entirely Bitcoin native, it has like this seamless peg of Bitcoin. So instead of, for example, if I'm right now trying to go into Aave, I got to wrap my Bitcoin, put it as an ERC-20, this sidechain directly attached to Bitcoin would allow you to just have that seamless, it's already on there, right? So you don't have to wrap anything. You have like actual Bitcoin that is just being represented on that sidechain, all still secured by Bitcoin. So that's kind of like high level overview. I guess there's like a lot of kind of politics and stuff like that going on right now, because we have like this massive campaign by the Layer 2 Labs guys trying to push this feature on Bitcoin. You have a lot of Bitcoin maxis saying, why the heck do we need this? You have a lot of DeFi enthusiasts who are like, oh my God, this is incredible. Finally, we have the features that we want on all these other chains on Bitcoin. So it's just bringing up a lot of interesting questions around Bitcoin governance, how things are getting implemented on Bitcoin itself, features that deserve to be on Bitcoin or as a separate entity entirely. And of course, just like this feature itself, like, is it adding anything to Bitcoin? Is it a waste of everyone's time? Could this break Bitcoin potentially, right? I think a big, people are like extra weary right now because we look back to like some updates that happened to Bitcoin years and years ago,
and now kind of being used as the thing to blame for what brought us ordinals today.
Right.
So like it's not whether I like ordinals or not, people that are hating it are like, you know, these updates, we got to let them play out. We don't know. And obviously anyone that's against ordinals are like, well, we don't want to touch the main chain at all now because it has these unintended consequences down the line that no one really thinks of yet. So yeah, a lot of different things at play. It's very fascinating how it's all kind of coalescing right now. And I guess finally, I'll just close off here. It's all really hitting ahead right now because, and this is the piece that kind of perturbs a lot of people, is that you've got Layer 2 Labs pushing the BIP, right? It's like, it's weird that there's like a company and like a figurehead around this change. And that just kind of makes everyone inherently suspicious. It could be like the best feature in the world, but like when you have like a dictator type guy getting mad at people on Twitter, right? It just like makes the whole thing taste a little different. So yeah, I'll quit ranting on it on that. But yeah, interesting things all around.
But like, does that really matter if this guy's pushing it? It's not like he's, you know, Vitalik where he has such influence. Or really, ultimately, it's determined by node operators if they adopt it or not.
I think you're exactly right. Right, anyone that's getting that's feeling some type of way about this dictator type figurehead trying to do something knows that the power of Bitcoin is its decentralization. We've seen this movie before, 2017 Block Size Wars. The nodes won, right? So like, you're right. I think it could all be very like, oh, are you not a true Bitcoiner, a believer of the decentralization? Then don't worry about what anyone's trying to push. It's not going to happen in a way that isn't consensual, right?
Right. So it doesn't sound like the probability of this being adopted is very high, is basically what I'm gathering from you and from like crypto Twitter.
I would say, I mean, I don't know. Don't let my verbiage give you like a sentiment, because I have no idea. I think you go to Layer 2 Labs and you see like they have like a wall of support, just everyone tweeting that they support BIP 300-301. People that I did not expect would ever be behind this that are saying, oh, I totally support it, it's great. So it stuff like that makes me say like, oh, maybe there is some hope for this and it's actually closer than we think. And then plus you also figure that Layer 2 Labs gets a cash injection with some fundraising. So now they're extra incentivized to make it happen. If it's ever going to happen, it feels like now would be the time. And like the process for making it happen, you know, that's kind of where a lot of people are focusing right now, because everyone's wondering like, oh, can they like brute force a hard fork here? Like, how would this look? Of course, that whole thing plays out in a way that still is relies on consensus. So like, even if you do have a fork, people can still kind of maintain the original fork if they want, right? Like, and that's, you know, that's why we have Bitcoin Cash today. Again, we've kind of seen how this happens. So yeah, I don't know. I honestly do not know. Is it a probability of it going through? I thankfully I'm not too much of a betting man, because I wouldn't know what odds to put on that.
No, I hear you. Personally speaking, are you for it or against it?
I am not. First glance, I look at it and I'm like, what the heck? We have Ethereum. Honestly, right? Like, I look at it and I'm just like, there's no point. We have Ethereum. Their argument is, yeah, but you don't need Ethereum when it's on Bitcoin. And it kind of like reduces the risk for shit coins, et cetera, and things like that, because you're kind of relying on Bitcoin to keep things, you know, in check, so to speak. And that's like an interesting argument, right? And it's, I get that. I like it. But I also just the maxi side of me looks at this and I'm like, that is a whole new feature. You're changing the game entirely. Stupid. Right. I feel like I'm like very quickly like it's too much. It's we have Lightning, right? Like, that's a little bit more in line, if you will. Yeah, personally, I'm not immediately for it. Can I be swayed? Probably. I mean, if Paul Stork buys me a dinner, then I guess he's lobbying for my vote, and then I'll switch my node. I don't know. And that's like, that's the thing. Like, can Bitcoin be gamed? Like, actually, I don't know, because people are being convinced on Twitter, you know? And like, if that's the pool of people that all kind of matter, then, you know, that's interesting, right? Because now you're like politicking Bitcoin.
Right.
Wow, Nick, I didn't think you were that easy. Just a dinner?
Yeah, I mean, I'll get dinner, sure. I'll let him buy me the caviar, but yeah, I don't know. No, I'm not that easy. I'll stick to some morals here, but
All right. Well, we appreciate the update on the sidechain wars. I guess we can call them sidechain wars or BIP 300-301 wars. Taking it over to the Solana ecosystem, lately there's been like tremendous news breaking, you know, settlement with Visa. There's also a partnership with Shopify to accept payments using the Solana network. And then there was the MakerDAO. The consideration for using Solana as a governance blockchain. So they're getting a lot of attention. And then now there's like the FTX, the judge ruled that they can approve the liquidation of FTX's Solana amongst other tokens. So there's a lot of price speculation there. But from what I understand, the ecosystem's quite strong. And Lenny, can you enlighten us? What have you been seeing? What's going on with the Solana ecosystem? And what are you working on? And also, I'd love to hear about your NFT project that we spoke briefly about on our last Twitter space.
Of course. Some really great conversations here. I love listening to. Sometimes you put yourself into a little bit of an echo chamber. and it's nice to hear different perspectives coming from, you know, guys who are who are clearly into the Bitcoin and ETH side of things. So I'll try to keep it short. But I think a few points to highlight. Where, you know, you mentioned the Shopify news, which came out a couple weeks ago, which is obviously huge for the ecosystem, discussing things like, you know, referencing Solana Pay and the ability to purchase real life goods in a safe manner, and specifically on a platform that people are already used to and have clearly high usage. So it just becomes another add-on to your site when building out your site, right? This doesn't become something that's like it was before, where it's a significantly harder barrier to entry to allow to accept payments, to crypto payments as a whole, but specifically for Solana. So that was a really, really cool one. And it was also cool to hear like the interviews that were coming out from there. So when they were talking about their CEO and their product managers were coming out and discussing the decision that was made, it was really cool to hear their thoughts, you know, on why they chose Sol. What do they expect the future to look like? Specifically, they, you know, shout out to Bonk Currency. It was the one other token that they mentioned. They mentioned obviously USDC, and then they mentioned Sol and Bonk. And we're one of 20 EC founders of Bonk, so that was a really cool shout out from them. But I think the bigger news was Visa, and apart from just obviously the name itself, I mean, you know, without crapping on other chains, you know, it becomes very apparent that certain partnerships can be bought, and with enough of a large of a bankroll, you can basically get almost anybody you want. The question is sort of like, what does that partnership actually look like, and what is it? What are the potentials that come up from it, and the understanding behind it? Like, was it just clearly a cash grab aspect, or is there something through to it? And in the case of Visa, I mean, they put out this. They called it a deep dive on Solana, a high-performance blockchain network. And they put out this document that sort of like went through their thought process on why they chose to work with Solana versus any other chain. And you're talking about really smart people. I mean, it's written by a few different people here in here, Mustafa Bedawala and Arjuna Wijayakun. I apologize if I butchered those names, but it's just an incredible, incredible read. And anybody that hasn't gone through it, I highly, highly suggest going through it. And a couple of the key points, I guess I'll just throw out here, sort of like, you know, they talk about obviously transactions per sections. TPS is obviously a big topic of discussion amongst chains in general. And Visa has their number at 65,000 transactions per second on their own network. And then they start going through other chains, and what they recognize is that Sol is at 400 TPS that can surge to 2,000 TPS during times of peak demand, but ETH can handle 12, and Bitcoin can handle 7. So that was obviously their first one. And when you talk about like a situation of how can you have something that's running parallel to their own infra network, because we're not talking about, you know, Sol taking over Visa's network, but they're discussing it so more so as something that works alongside with it. And talking about alongside something that's with it, I mean, it obviously became apparent to them, what good does it do you to have a chain that can only do 12 TPS when you're running 65,000 TPS? So that was like their first one. The next one was talking about fees. And I mean, it really becomes comical when you read this, because, and I guess it's sort of, and when I'm done talking, I'd love to hear other people's perspectives on these things, but it just becomes like something to me in my mind that just so, it's just so obvious when looking at it that I don't see another future. I mean, you look at like these transaction fees and they're going, it's a chart over here that they have over the course of 2 years. And Sol is, their whole thing was that Sol's, it's not so much, I mean, yes, it's the low cost though, being 0.001 cents per transaction, but also its predictability. It has stayed that 0.001 cents per transactions continuously for 2 years without ever deviating from it. And when you see the chart of every other chain, you're talking about it ranging from $1 to $25 on massive fluctuations week over week, day over day, month over month. And again, would completely go against anything that Visa would try to do in terms of mass adoptability. And then the final one was speed, right? I mean, and at this point, again, it's just comical. I mean, Sol is at 0.4 seconds for finality. Ethereum's at 3 minutes. Polygon's at 20 minutes. Right, like it just again, and you read this document, and then you recognize this was not a paid for partnership. This was not something that was just sort of like, you know, what does a moonshot look like for something on how Visa can possibly get into crypto? Like this was something that was very well thought through, comparing every other chain against each other for the main key things that matter for mass adoption. And I think that's the main point that I'll hit on is the things that matter. Because unfortunately, I think we find ourselves put into these like chambers where, you know, ETH is better because it's got higher. There's more money on DeFi than on any other chain. Like, okay, but who actually cares about that? So I may care about that as a trader for the sake of like liquidity or opportunities or growth in certain aspects. But when you're looking at it as a chain as a whole in terms of mass adoption and the effects that it can have on real life things that we do on the daily. For example, payments, there becomes a very clear set of metrics that you want to be tracking. And in no form of way does Solana lose on any of the metrics that you would try to choose. So I think that was really like the main highlight of all this coming out with Visa. It's just showing that the tech works and the tech outwins any other one, and no partnership or paid partnership can outlast that. And I think that was like the main thing from all of this. And then how would that pertain to everything else? I mean, right now we're super in on SocialFi. I think this whole friend tech, we'll call it hysteria or whatever, is extremely fun to watch. It's like watching you're watching like real life. It's like right in front of your face. Just this whole new dynamic of how we envision and how we perceive our connections, what our value of connections are worth, potential output that can come from these sort of connections. And, you know, I was just looking at their thing before, and their whole thing is like your network is your net worth. And their version of that comes through these private chat groups. Now there's flaws in it. I mean, I think like the whole thing as from its core is perceived, is built on the perception of that the only way to make money is through the sale of the tokens. So users aren't, you know, if you own the chat room, you're not inclined to want to keep your users. You're more inclined to want to see them being flipped because that's how you'll make money. And then I think the other big aspect of it is that you end up in a situation where like you've now become slaves to whoever you've opened yourself up to. And I think we saw this happening. There was like this mass capitulation last week of like people that got excited and they signed up, and whether it was only fangirls or gamers or crypto guys. And it was like, holy crap, I'm making all this money and my keys are going up to 0.1 ETH and 0.5 ETH and 1 ETH. And guys that had only 500 followers on Twitter all of a sudden have these massive things. But then all of a sudden last week, we saw countless of tweets coming out that were like, what did I just get myself into? I now have 100 people like messaging me all day long, asking for, like expecting me to give them something. And it's like, I didn't tell you what I was going to give and why this should now be the worth of my share for my chat. But that's sort of the thing that you do. I mean, you buy into this concept and it's like, I'm buying into this group so that I can get direct access to this person. And unfortunately, people abuse what that means. And we don't know like what that means, or we don't know like what sort of, you know, what is owed to the people that join your group. And I think that starts becoming like a much larger question when you know, thinking about SocialFi as a whole and our connections and then playing into things like whether you're Anon or your Web 2 life or your Web 3 life and all these sort of different things come into play, or absolutely loving it. This is like my jam. There's just so many like just real life cases that are happening in front of our eyes that can be examined and you see it play out in real time on Twitter. You know, you see people dumping their friends and then getting, you know, revenge dumping the other guy's tokens and then people creating pacts with each other. People have this whole 3-3 pact where it's like, I buy three of your keys, you buy three of mine. And people are playing all sorts of games trying to figure out like what this looks like. But yeah. I'm personally really bullish on that side of things. And, you know, just to end off, I think personally, that's where we find ourselves focusing on right now, which is sort of this concept of like, you know, we're building all these different products as part of this product suite. But where does it finally end off with in terms of what can be learned from you as a user across the suite? And that's where sort of this concept comes in of building this profile, this login for different dApps and a means and a way for you to manage your data, but also your connections. And then you'll see some stuff come out about that over the next bit. We're building some other things right now, but I think that's this new meta of SocialFi that we've entered into is what's going to take over attention economy for the next foreseeable future. And then we personally plan on playing into it.
Yeah, I agree. So did you just drop some alpha? Are you guys working on a similar friend tech for on the Solana ecosystem? Is that what I'm hearing?
It is yes. I mean, taking the concept and doing, I guess, just imagining a little bit of a further understanding of what that actually turns into. I'll give you the one liner. I mean, the app is called Glass, and the one liner is unlock the power of your personal data and social network with Glass, a cutting edge Web3 social insights application.
Cool. I love it. The moment you guys launch, message me. I'll buy one of your keys.
Legit.
But only if you buy one of mine.
We got to do a 3-3 pack. You buy three, I buy three.
Deal. Hold me to it. Yeah, I've been watching the friend.tech. I signed up. I think it's really cool. I like signing up to these new things just because, you know, it's just exciting. I at this stage, it's definitely experimental. Who knows if friend.tech is like the MySpace to the Facebook, right? And then like maybe the Glass iteration will be the one that actually does it right and like spreads. But yeah, it's really cool to see. And then like you were saying earlier, you know, if you don't perform, right, people buy these keys thinking they're gonna get something, and then they're like, hey, you're not doing anything. They just dump your keys, and then like one moment your keys are worth an ETH, and the next moment they're worth 0.0001 ETH, you know. And that's quite a roller coaster to experience. But yeah, definitely not a dull moment in the friend tech ecosystem. What I thought was really cool about it also was how they used the Optimism stack, well, through Base used Optimism stack, and then they launched on Base. So I thought that was really, really cool to see like so quickly a real world application different than what we've seen up until now being deployed on Base. I wonder if they're able to be multi-chain. That would be really cool. Like, could they somehow, just like you have Aave on multiple chains, you know, friend.tech expanding to other chains, you know? So if you want to use application, but you're not an Ethereum person, you're a Solana person, maybe you can get friend.tech on Solana and buy keys in the Solana ecosystem. I don't know. It's just a thought that popped into my head.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that was part of, you know, echoing some of the tweets that were going out the first few days was like, I can't remember who it was, but I remember somebody like showed like this screenshots of the process and the steps that were needed in order to, like, you know, you have to bridge some funds over through Base and create the wallet and then get on like the eventual process of opening up your Frontech account. And the person like shared a bunch of screenshots and was like, please don't tell me this is what mass adoption looks like. You know, like,
right.
Like
right.
You can't, like, yes, I figured it out. And I'm sure our little circle can figure it out, but don't tell me that the future of SocialFi looks like somebody having to go through all this process, like to create a single account.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're a month. They're only a month in about. And I mean, honestly, the app is horrible. Like, it's so glitchy. It barely works, to be honest. But I imagine it'll be improved upon as and new sure. features and new
they're,
features.
They're making bank right now. They're hitting, I think they ended like 10 million in profit in their first month, 150,000 users in 1 month. Like you're talking, it's
wow.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Actually, it's 16 million fees generated since launch, 31 and, million in current TVL.
And that's on their sequencer, like on, yeah, on like
it's nuts. Wow. $8 million revenue distributed to creators since launch. Wow. Yeah, somebody made a really excellent Flipside Crypto dashboard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's flipsidecrypto.xyz, and then just look up Frontech. It's a pretty excellent dashboard. They have all the main stats that you want. It's, I'm telling you guys, if you're not, you don't even have to play, like I don't even have a Frontech account, but just watching this play out in real life, like it's the type of thing that in a year from now, there's going to be articles talking about the process of what this looked like as it happened. But it's just really cool. Like you can just with a little bit of paying attention, you can have a front seat, you know, front row seat to it playing out live.
That's really cool. I'm going to check out that chart. Thanks for mentioning it.
I've got a quick question here. Aria, I think you said buy your keys. Like what are you buying? Like shares? Like is it an ERC-20?
Nick, how many times have I asked you to
I know. I was gonna preface this with saying that you're gonna get pissed at me for asking.
If only you would sign up, you would know. But I'll still answer your question. So basically, the way it works is you're buying keys. You start off, you buy your own key first for like, I don't know, 50
with
cents.
ETH, right. So I'm just
with
like
ETH. Yeah, everything is an ETH.
Funding my account, basically.
It's with ETH. Everything is ETH denominated and works with ETH. And then the second key that's purchased is like a dollar, and then it goes up to like $1.50 and two and three, and it just keeps going up like aggressively at some point. So like some people's keys, if they have like 20 holders, you want to mint one of their keys, it's going to cost you, I don't know, 0.1 ETH at that point, right? And then
there's it's a bonding curve. The more keys there are, the more expensive it is.
Yeah, and then there's people that do I saw this application where you can trade keys, like fractional keys. So there's like a DEX out there where you could take a key that belongs to somebody and fractionalize it and then provide liquidity to it. And you can really go full out degen on people's keys, which is crazy that someone launched such an application so quickly based off this other app that just launched, which barely works.
It was literally, I think, within 3 days. I think he called it FriendMex, like after BitMEX.
It's amazing. Only in crypto.
Literally 3 days. And the other really cool one is, I don't remember the name off the top of my head. It starts with an M. Maybe somebody else remembers. But they basically buy keys to chat groups using funds from the pool, and then they screenshot the messages, and then they give like all the alpha back to the holders of this coin.
Right, I saw that. It's hilarious. It's wild.
I think that's the same thing.
Yeah,
a few years ago, I think I'm like delayed a second, guys. So I'm like talking over you. Forgive me.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
It reminds me. I mean, this is like such a weird little niche thing, but like all these master classes and online courses and whatnot that would come out for like $1,000 a pop, and then there were like these separate groups that would pop up, and you basically just like paid one central entity like a way smaller subscription. They would buy all the like super high price things and just redistribute. They were all just videos, right? It was like it's way too easy in that case to steal if it doesn't have to be like necessarily 100% token gated, because it's just content, right? It's like, it's a kind of weird little property of it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like the Netflix days before they limited how many users you had. So people just like shared accounts and paid one subscription fee. But yeah, it's really cool. And I keep checking it like once a week or so just to see what's going on with my, and then you can see also your friends of friends, you know, who they're buying. And then it becomes a whole speculative game of like, okay, buy this guy. He's no one knows of him yet, but he has a huge following on Twitter and he just joined. So then it becomes like a whole, you know, gaming the system.
Aria, do you have people in your DMs wondering where their product is and getting pissed at you for not making token go up?
No. Okay. No, not at all.
Because if I buy your keys, I'm going to be one disgruntled community member. Trust me, I'm going to be in your DMs every day wondering where my crap is, whatever the heck it is.
Bring it on. First, you have to sign up, Nick. Big talker over here. Okay, moving on from friend.tech, really cool application. One other thing I wanted to comment on. Did you say, Lenny, that Shopify will be accepting payments in Bonk and Sol? I thought it was just a stablecoin integration.
Yeah, so they interviewed the CEO on TechCrunch, and it's a really awesome line. They asked him, like, what are further plans for other additional coins? And he only mentioned two names. He mentioned Sol and Bonk.
So that's really interesting because from like a tax standpoint, at least in the U.S., again, some other countries, I can't speak for other countries. I would say most countries, though, have similar tax laws. But like Sol asset is property. So if you bought Sol, you know, at the height of the market for $200 and now you're going to use it and it's $20 to buy some sort of, item on Shopify, right? You're going to have $180 capital gain loss, and it might be short term, long term. And that's just not really practical if you're in the US, if you're going to be using it for payments. So I just found that really interesting that they're going to offer it from a technical standpoint. It's super simple. On the back end, they probably convert it to USDC, Shopify, if they don't want to hold the asset. But I just thought on the front end, from a user standpoint, like what would be the point of allowing such an asset to be used for payment if the current tax laws make it super challenging?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. All right. With regards to how we're seeing more international adoption with merchant services leveraging upon blockchain. You know, one company that comes to mind is like Ibex Mercado. And I think that they're building out infrastructure and maybe even a potential partnership with Shopify as well, with leveraging upon the Lightning Network for e-commerce. So does it make sense in the US? Don't know, but in emerging markets where you might be seeing some type of hyperinflation happening, it might make more sense there.
That's a good point. Yeah. Speaking of stable coins, like over this last week or so, USDC, which is the Circle's stable coin, they've launched natively on a bunch of layer twos and the Cosmos ecosystem and Near. So it wasn't that you weren't able to get USDC on these other blockchains, but it was using some sort of, you know, third-party bridge, which is less secure. And now the actual Circle company that mints USDC natively is launching on these blockchains, which is really cool to see. So A, it's more secure, their token on these blockchains. And secondly, you can actually redeem it directly with Circle if you have an account for dollars without, you know, bridging it back to Ethereum or Polygon, which is what they've been on so far before this announcement. So really cool development as well in regards to like stable coins.
Right. There's been some numerous developments. I met with one of the representatives from Near at Permissionless. And I think they're just getting started on their marketplace, helping businesses that build on Near connect the dots to various companies that can support that ecosystem. I know we're in works with them to try and provide them and businesses that are building on Near with, some type of accounting solution. So it's interesting to see that we're having these conversations with them, and then they're also, you know, having conversations with Circle as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. Chris, what I'm curious to hear from you, if you're seeing any particular trends from your clients. You know, I think as the market is, I think it's taking a turn. It may not be noticeable in the price, but I think in regulatory wise, sentiment, you know, with ETF interest, etc. And we've been in the bear market for quite a while. I think we're turning a page. Maybe just not yet, but it's in middle. You know, I'm curious to see if you've seen any trends that, based on your clients' activities or new kind of clients that are signing up. And the second question I have for you is, I'm wondering what kind of challenges you're running into from the accounting side, or you know, any new challenges from the last time we spoke, or is just more of the same?
Right. Yep. So with regards to trends, top of mind, cross-border transactions, you know, that pertain to, like, you know, enterprise companies adopting a blockchain. You know, various L1s and L2s, they're reaching out. They need help with their 2022 books. Companies that may have a U.S. entity foundation located in the Caymans, maybe a European entity as well. You know, how do we account for all the different activity taking into consideration that one entity might need to comply with GAAP, another one might need to comply with IFRS standards? So that has been a consistent trend, but it's great to see some well-known brands get into the space. And that has been something that's been consistent even during the bear market. But also a lot of these companies are looking to build strategic partnerships, you know, all, you know, leading towards mass adoption as well. So, you know, we recently announced a partnership with Deloitte to help support their companies from a multitude of different perspectives. You know, not uncommon to have a client work with like on-chain accounting. They might loop in maybe a tax specialist, someone who's doing the day-to-day accounting work, and then someone that just chimes in maybe once a quarter from a tax perspective. But nonetheless, it kind of gets back to that trend associated with payments as well. So you want to build, you know, it's a small business, a COO, you know, a couple co-founders, and they're hiring their engineers abroad to try and lower costs. You know, and one way of actually implementing payroll is through on-chain activity. So a lot of exciting trends there. And then there's still, you know, companies that are interested in launching their own token. What's the utility behind that? I think companies are being a bit more mindful with NFT drops. You know, the SEC, I think just yesterday or a couple of days ago with CryptoKitties, you know, I think it's Mila Kunis's company, that there's some type of lawsuit as well. So, I mean, we have to go through this type of filtration process associated with being more mindful in terms of how we're going to launch projects moving into the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing some of that too, which is like kind of obvious for a startup, you know, contracting with developers overseas. Like, why would they pay them using traditional finance rails? You know, like, sending a wire is expensive, slow. You know, they're already operating in the space. They have wallets, you know, so like, obviously it's a no brainer for them to send using stablecoins. So we see a ton of that, right. Which then opens the door for like, okay, I'm paying foreign people or I have foreign investors, and that, you know, adds on additional tax filing requirements. So that's quite common. Something that we've seen, which is like, I don't know why it hasn't been resolved or like implemented, but we get a lot of individual clients or even funds that are trading and they're using DeFi, which that part's easy because through APIs, you know, DeFi is easy, right? It's the centralized exchanges that are really challenging to pull the data out And, you know, there's like a whole process if to get like API keys, and then it doesn't work properly, or it's there's an issue with it. And we would love to see like an accounting mode where you give your accountant access to your account. You know, they can't touch your funds, but they could go in there and generate the API keys and do what they need to do to extract the data so that they can reconcile your activity and then file a form for your return. And we haven't seen that. And it's actually one of our like biggest pain points that we keep running into. I don't think anyone from Binance or Coinbase is listening, but right now, but I'd love for them to change that, because that would make our lives easier and just the reporting process way better.
Right. Certainly, you know, expedite, you know, the process of implementation and, you know, leading to specific deadlines. You know, a lot of our clients filed extensions. You got that October 15th deadline that's looming. You know, to be able to easily just log into the exchange, extract the API credentials, it's read only, and then plug that into Bitwave, and then be able to account for that activity. We've been making some development efforts associated with how we connect to various DeFi protocols as well, in terms of viewing liquidity, because there's always the risk associated with a permanent loss. So I know that, you know, we've been making some development efforts on our end. You know, we're working closely with exchanges, and it's from an accounting and tax perspective. So there's room for us to, you know, like any business, improve processes. But sometimes, you know, we have to work with partners in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. But as far as like liquidity, you know, on DeFi products, I mean, they have docs, their APIs are permissionless. You know, the blockchain is permissionless. It's really where the centralized exchanges, you know, you actually have to speak to them and they have to be willing to cooperate with you. So, I'm glad to hear that you guys are exploring it and trying to improve your connections with centralized exchanges.
100%.
Yeah. You know, something else that I've been very focused on this last few months were the layer twos that are popping up. I don't know if any other speakers have been exploring it, but there's the Linea blockchain, which is a ZK rollup, which has been created by Consensus. Really cool layer two. There's Mantle, that's another new one. Then there's a bunch of like, you know, ZK EVM, ZK Sync, a bunch of ZKs. And you have Base, like we touched upon. And it's really cool to just see multiple areas of development on Ethereum, but it's not, you know, within Ethereum, it's on top of it. And you have all this activity that's going on, which is going to further the Ethereum ecosystem to become more scalable. And then there's also just, this is not, you know, no one knows anything about airdrops, but there's a good chance there are going to be some airdrops on these chains. So if you're an airdrop chaser, you might want to check them out, do some swaps, bridge some tokens. Another development that was really cool to see was the Polygon Studios, or Polygon Labs, I forgot what the parent company is, but they announced the issue or the migration of Matic to a new token called POL. It's scheduled, they have to first vote it in, but once it's voted in the next couple months, it's scheduled for like a 4-year migration, where essentially you just send your tokens to a smart contract and then it sends back these new POL tokens. So it's like a 1-for-1. Nothing's changing to the tokenomics, but these new tokens are supposed to be like the previous token, but like on steroids, with like additional features. You can use them for staking, for restaking other chains within the Polygon ecosystem. And that's really cool. Can't wait for that to actually go live and be voted on and go live. So I'm curious if anyone here has something they want to share about what they have found in their corner of the ecosystem that excites them. You know, Nick, Lenny, both you guys are, I would say, maybe not polar opposites, but it's quite opposite corners of the ecosystem. And it's so refreshing to get, you know, insights from individuals that are like in the weeds of the ecosystem building. And yeah, I'd love to hear like, what is something that really excites you that's new about your space that probably none of us are aware of?
Lenny put it really well before too, that, I mean, I guess Aria, you just said it too, but like, we're all kind of just very different, different, but similar, right? Like we're hitting different angles of the ecosystem, but like we all kind of, have obviously these common denominators and everything. I don't know, OCA team, like that might be like an interesting kind of angle. Like this is a very eclectic group, but like we all still kind of have, these common themes that we all care deeply about and that are just very relevant to us. I don't know, maybe there's like a way to kind of capture that a little bit better, but yeah, I don't know, I just had to throw that out there.
Yeah, how about you, Lenny, anything?
Yeah, sure, I'll hop in quickly. So I mean, one, moving away from Soul, we'll discuss other things. So moving away from Soul, I mean, one of the other ones that I'm actually pretty excited about, mainly because I just know some really good people that I respect within the space that are involved in it. But Monad seems to be like the next hot chain L2 that's going to come up.
Is that on Ethereum?
Yeah, I think it's another roll up idea. I have not taken too much of a deep dive into it. The only reason I'm just paying attention to it in the background is, again, because of the people I know that are involved in it. I mean, like, I know, like, CMS Holdings and a couple guys are some of the bigger names involved in it. There's a massive, massive wait list right now for, to get on chain. But I would pay attention to that name. I guess in general in this space, it's been really cool. I know we hit on ordinals before. And I know Nick was talking about sort of like this whole concept of DeFi moving onto chain, onto Bitcoin, and what that would looks like and the people for it and against it. But I personally though, I'll share my last thoughts, which was like, I kind of felt that this would happen. And I may have even said this on actually the last time that we were on a Spaces together, which was like, you know, the market proved me wrong. Like I didn't think that the concept of ordinals was going to be accepted into the Bitcoin world. I got into crypto in 2013 through Bitcoin, obviously. And for me, that's always been like just the gold standard. You know, you don't screw around with gold. Like it is what it is. And if there's things that are trying to do it there that it was never built for originally, then you probably shouldn't be doing it there. That was always like my opinion. Now, the market proved me wrong. I mean, our ordinals flew like crazy. I totally faded it. People made who knows how much money on projects that I could have minted and that I had access to and et cetera, et cetera. But it all came crashing down together with everything else. And it is interesting to see the threads that go on Twitter of like people that are defending the position that there is something inherently over like that ordinals has that other NFTs don't have. And I think like at the end of the day, like I think the market clearly showed us that we view them all the same, whether it's the NFTs are on Sol or on ETH or on Polygon or ordinals or whatever it is as a whole, it's become very clear and apparent that what we thought works doesn't work anymore. I'm really, really excited about what's going to come now from all this, which is like now that we've like, you know, sort of smashed this all down and recognize what does work, what didn't work, why didn't it work, you know, remove hype, remove substance, like remove all these different things. And like, what are you left with? So I'm really, really excited to see like what this next wave, like, cause there will be another meta, like we will, NFTs will come back, whether we call them digital collectibles or we call them NFTs, or I don't know what, somebody's going to come up with some new name, who knows, but like they'll come back. Like, the concept is there to come back. So I'm really, really excited to see what that does come back looking like. And I think it's like, it's almost like Friend Tech is like that first iteration of it, where it's like in a week, it totally overtook all of NFT's volume across all chains into one thing. You know, so it's like, we know that what we thought works doesn't work. I'm excited to now see what, like what the new meta will become for what does work. And personally, we're trying to explore that. You know, we never ended up launching our NFT collection. It was, I mean, it just made no sense. You can promise the world, you can ship the world, you can give everything, but as long as the as long as there wasn't like a clear value driven proposition, or where it's like I'm buying this for 100 and it will be worth 500 soon, like people just didn't want it. And I think so. We decided to step back and be like, okay, so like, what does this look like? So we have a version of what we think it could look like. Hopefully, you'll see it soon. It's going to be under a brand called Saturday Morning. Going back to like some of my original roots, pre-crypto of you know, my fashion background, but I am excited to see what other people can come up with as well.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's always exciting to see new ideas and new areas emerge, and I hope you keep us in the loop when you launch, because we have a lot of confidence that you're gonna launch something really cool. I think we're gonna wrap it up now. I just want to thank all of our speakers, Chris, Lenny, Nick, David. I had a fantastic time with all you, and all our listeners. We really appreciate you joining. I hope the alpha, the information, the broad coverage that we discussed taught you something, you learned something new. And till next time, thank you guys.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you,
SF guys.
Thank you. Bye, thank you.